All right, everyone, welcome in. It is another episode of Inside Boxing Live. We're presented by PPV.com. It's Dan Canobio. It's the former world champion, Chris Algieri, and we're ready to go. PPV.com is our proud presenting sponsor. Go and follow them on all socials, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, everywhere. We got some big-time fight announcements with PPV.com. We'll be heading out to Vegas shortly. And as you know, on Fight Week, we get a pop-in with BPV.com, live interactive chat. You can stream the fights to your phone, tablet, big screen TV. You can watch it on an airplane. You can watch it anywhere. BPV.com, never ask you for a subscription, too. Fight to Fight won't lock you in on that. So shout out to BPV.com, our proud presenting sponsor. This is episode one of Inside Boxing. Did I say Inside Boxing Live?
I think you might have.
Oh, God. I'm thinking of so many things. This is not Inside Boxing Live, guys. This is Inside Boxing. Inside Boxing. No more live. It is the first episode under the Uncrowned banner. Yahoo Sports, our friend Ariel Helwani. We dropped the live, and it's just muscle memory. 450-plus episodes of Inside Boxing Live has got me saying that. But it's a new era, Chris. How are you, my friend?
I am great. I'm excited for this new era. Episode one. So at least now I can say I was in the very first episode of Inside Boxing, because Inside Boxing Live, that wasn't the case. You brought me on a couple hundred in. So now I'm a day one guy.
You can get the episodes on our regular feeds. Everything's going to stay the same, but you can now get it over on Ariel Helwani show feed, which has a lot of subscribers. So whoever's watching for the first time, that is Chris Algieri, former world champion, 140 pounds, former kickboxing world champion, fought Manny Pacquiao, Amir Khan, Errol Spence, Conor Benn, and then some. I'm Dan Canobio. I am from the boxing world, family of CompuBox. Been following the sport since a child, since birth. And work in the boxing media industry. So that's how you get to know us, for all of our new listeners. All of our existing listeners, you know us by now. That I'm Cornball Dan, according to Henry Garcia, and that's piece of shit Chris Algieri.
Yep. great shout out there by a longtime listener of the show, Mr. Garcia. Obviously watches and listens to our show quite a bit. But
do we want to address that right away? Like, Ryan Garcia gets a huge win. Over Mario Barra's dominating performance, just looked unreal. And let's just start there. Well, we'll get to the Henry Garcia stuff too, but Henry Garcia did call us out afterwards, is a fan of the podcast. Love that. Like and subscribe, Henry.
Yep.
Yeah, that was some good stuff. But yeah, Ryan Garcia with a unanimous decision win over Barrios, drops him in the first minute of the first round with a right hand. The right hand of Ryan Garcia, the jab of Ryan Garcia, the defense. The boxing abilities. This guy, who was that? What were we watching Saturday night?
We watched Ryan live up to his potential. That's what we saw. We saw him. He always had all of that stuff. He just went to the left hook. He made it seem like he was a one-trick pony, but we always talk about his vast amateur background. The guy is not a YouTuber-turned-boxer. He was a high-level international amateur-turned-pro, and honestly, I think he just used to rely on his talent so much, we didn't get to see the actual skill set. Last night, we saw the skill set on display with the physicality, the speed, both hands, the jab. You mentioned it, the right hand, the left hook. I mean, we need that guy to show up every time. Whatever he did in preparation for this fight, physically, mentally, psychologically, he needs to do that every time, because that guy who fought last night is a world beater.
That's the thing, Chris. You would attest this more than anyone. Like, you got the physical skills, you have good coaching, you have all of that, but how much of the sport is mental? Like, how much is it about putting together great camp after great camp after great camp, having your personal life in order, especially when you're making tons of money and you're a celebrity? That's what we have with Ryan Garcia. It's like the gifts are always there. There's a reason why you chose him for Ring IQ over Mario Barros. And you brought up a very good point there. He's not a streamer turned boxer. He's not a misfits guy. He's not a YouTuber that boxes. This guy has been boxing since he was 6, 7, 8 years old. You know, that's why Henry was so upset with us. That was his coach growing up. But for him to put it all together is what we saw on Saturday night when he defeated Mario Barros. Also, Barrios just offered nothing. Zero game plan, flat-footed, just zero defense, like no jab, like a putrid performance from Barrios.
slow feet, slow punches, no head movement. I just stayed right on the line. Showed toughness, but that's about it. That's the only really positive thing you could say about Barrios' performance last night. He's a tough guy. He was getting hit with some big bombs by Ryan all night long. But that's it, man. But for back to Ryan real quick, because obviously this is all about Ryan. In terms of what is most important for me from this fight is that he got over the hump. And that hump is performing on the world stage. He had been to the world stage a few times, but he always seemed to falter. And he couldn't get over that hump. He couldn't get the title fight. He couldn't get the win in the big fight. The Gervonta Davis fight, even the Devin Haney fight, he didn't get the win that night, even though he, you know, likes to say he beat Haney's ass. But that was still a very, very, very close fight. But he got over the hump. He was on the world stage. Everybody was tuned in. The world was watching. And he put on a masterful performance. If that guy shows up, he's a problem for everybody. And the sport of boxing needs that version of Ryan Garcia.
I said this in the last episode. I know we picked Barrios to win. We're going to eat some crow on that, but that's fine. I mean, we do a lot of episodes. Yep. We do a lot of predictions. We put our predictions out there. I clip out our predictions and I put them on social media. I'm not afraid to be wrong, and I'm not afraid to put our picks out there, bets, all of that. I thought Barrios was going to win. I did not think Ryan Garcia would be able to put together that performance that we saw on Saturday night. In this sport, we go off previous performances. And if you go off previous performances, Ryan looked awful against Rolly Romero. Before that, it's a PED suspension, blew past the weight. You can't properly judge him on that fight with Devin Haney. And before that, some up and down performances. Barrios did not look great in his previous performances, but he looked a lot better than Ryan ever did in some of his past performances. So that went into our pick there. But Ryan Garcia is now a world champion. We thought we would go his whole career without ever saying that sentence. So it was pretty cool to see that. And I don't want to hear everyone knocking Barrios. Yes, you know, he wasn't probably one of the weaker champions, but he still had a title and he still held that belt for a very, very long time. So it is a win for Ryan. And absolutely. But going over to the stats just to show the domination of this fight for Ryan Garcia, just some numbers that I didn't think would ever see there from Ryan. Ryan landed 103 power shots after landing just 18 against Rolly Romero. Ryan's 82 jabs landed were career high, most ever landed on Mario Barrios. Garcia outlanded Barrios in 10 of the 12 rounds. He threw more punches. He landed more punches. That's what it comes down to me, was the right hand. And Obviously we talk about the left hand. The left hand of Ryan Garcia is one of the best punches in all of boxing. But I don't think Barrios was ready for the right. And he got hit with it in the first round and touched the canvas, looked shocked. And how many times have you told me this, Chris? You get hit with a shot early on in the fight and you never recover. And I think that was the case in this fight. But first off, the game plan of Ryan, and then now he has a right hand. Now he's a two-handed fighter.
Well, he's always had the right hand. And I think I brought it up on
not to this extent, though.
And no. Well, the real key here is not so much the right hand, because he's always had the right hand. If you remember the Tank Davis fight, Tank was worried about the right hand because he was using it well against the southpaw, Ryan was. And he throws that whipping, looping right hand behind guys' guards. And it's a hard shot. He can punch with both hands. The difference was the jab. He just set it up. He stepped in, over the line but with the hand, with the jab, behind that jab, and Barrios just didn't see the shot coming. The first one was a beautiful one, too, and then he threw that looping one around. I don't think Barrios saw either punch. One, because of the jab, and then two, he earmuffed himself and then got clipped. But yeah, the jab was really the story of the fight for me. Ryan showed a very excellent jab. He used it to deliver his power punches. That's what it's for. You know, some people have jabs, they're just very disruptive, and they stop the action, they stop the flow, they control the distance, control the pace, but then guys don't follow up with combinations. Ryan actually followed up with combinations and let his power shots go behind the jab.
Yeah, I mean, that was, he just had everything working. Like, his movement was outstanding. He was patient. You know, he was landing those shots.
He was slipping and sliding at times. Well, I
saw that in the Duarte fight, too. Like, when I went back and watched that again, like, he didn't get a lot of credit for the Duarte fight because we're still judging him off of the Gervonta fight, and everyone, the jury was still out on him. But the way he was moving in the Duarte fight, I was like, all right, he can box. And, you know, he just didn't jab as much in the Duarte fight, or as much in his career, than he did on Saturday night. Perfect foil for him was Barrios. And Barrios was not jabbing whatsoever. He just had nothing. When he was afraid to throw those jab because he was afraid to get countered, His legs looked like he had nothing there. And Ryan took advantage of it. I mean, he did what he was supposed to do. Like, well, I'm not going to sit here and say that Ryan didn't go in there and put together a great performance and put together a great game plan, because he absolutely did. And I'm seeing a lot of that today. Like, Ryan's acting all with his chest out because he beat Mario Barrios. Like, no, man. Like, won a world title.
Yeah, he's a world champion. No, it's a huge deal. And you know, of course, he's going to go out there and puff his chest and King Kong his way all the way until while people are listening. He's got the world's ear, so you might as well go for it. But yeah, no, this is a big deal. This is a culmination of his entire career. Winning a world title is an amazing, amazing experience and feat. It's really hard to do. It's really, really hard to do. Ryan has been, this is his fourth weight class. This was his, what was his third attempt, fourth attempt at a world title?
Really? Is it second? Oh, Haney. Well, no, the belt wasn't on, the title wasn't on the line against Haney.
Right.
Third. Gervonta's title was
third attempt at a world title. It's a big deal, and he deserves to be happy, especially off of that performance. Everyone going like, Barrios was the weakest link. It doesn't matter. So it's a world champion, and he got the victory and dominated. Even as bad as Barrios has looked, he still got a draw with Manny. He still got a draw with Ramos. He didn't win a round against Ryan.
No. It was a complete shutout. I did not have that in the bingo card. No. I did not have Ryan wide decision. Like, I thought for sure it'd be a close fight. I thought Barrios would be able to eke it out in the final three rounds. But it's good for boxing. It's good for the sport. Right. Ryan Garcia being a world champion, Ryan Garcia winning, Ryan Garcia being on top, it's good for the sport of boxing, especially here in the U.S. where we desperately need stars. And we'll talk about in a second where we think he'll go from here. But that was some good stuff, and I guess it is time now to play a very, very special video here. After the fight, Henry Garcia.
To the haters, because I gotta let this off my chest, because I won't be able to sleep. But Chris Algieri, you're a piece of shit. Okay, I'm sorry, you and your corny ass partner. Okay, not believing in my son.
What are we doing?
That's amazing.
I'm the corny ass partner, right? Not Paulie.
I assume so. It's got to be you. It's got to be you. I mean, maybe Paulie, but Napoli was picking Ryan to win for this one, so it wasn't. I don't think it was Ryan. So yeah, you're the corny ass partner,
bro. He's first off, thanks for watching,
Henry. Yes, thank you. Thank you, long time listener.
He's a fan. Second off, I'm very happy we could provide the team with motivation. That was bulletin board material. They had us up in the locker room. They probably played that before Ryan's walkout.
That's great. Ryan is the kid never ceases to amaze me. Like, I picked him to dominate Rollies, and then he goes out there and puts up that performance. I went to bat for him when he fought Gervonta, saying he didn't quit, and then he came out and said, like, I could have got up. Oh, dude, come on. I picked Haney to beat him, and then he goes out there and does what he did with Haney. Pick Barrios to beat him, then he goes out there and does what he does to Barrios. So from now on, whatever I say for Ryan, go the opposite if you're a betting man, because I am not able to pin this kid down for what he's going to do.
Corny.
I mean, who can? He's
corny-ass partner. That's what I don't even have a name, dude.
You'll get there. You'll get there. It's all right.
Corny ass partner. Yeah, Ryan kind of laughed it off. If you watch the video, Ryan kind of laughs it off. Like, his dad. I mean, you use these things.
He's being a dad. He's being a dad.
Listen, Henry Garcia. I did not think he was capable of drawing up a game plan to do this. I was wrong. Henry Garcia, you are a good trainer. You know your son better than anyone. You're undefeated with your son. They obviously drilled right hand. No one really saw that coming, as much as we talked about it. And we said, yeah, Ryan does have a right hand as well, and the jab as well. So great game plan from Henry. I will tip my cap to you. I would say, you know what? Yeah, I was wrong.
If that was really the question, it wasn't so much could Henry, you know, come up with a game plan. It was just, can Ryan execute? I think the issue with Ryan in the past was his execution. I don't know. I think obviously he's gotten very far with his son. You know, everything they've done from the amateurs up until, you know, the majority of their pro career, you know, they've been able to do it. And just fathers and sons have a different kind of connection when it comes to this sport. So I don't think it was that. It was just more Ryan being able to do it under the lights on the big show. And last night he did it.
We'll just look at it, like, once again, how we handicap this sport and how we look at fights and how we think they're going to play out. You go off past performances. and you go off
corner. And what have you done for me lately?
What have you done for me lately? Track records. Ryan Garcia, we just went over that. What have you done for me lately? What's his track record? Not great as of late. Henry Garcia doesn't train any other fighters, doesn't really have a track record as a trainer. Go to the other side. Joe Cousin and Bob Santos in his corner. So obviously you're going to go edge that corner for over there. So, yeah, I mean, that's how we were looking at this fight. That's how a lot of people were looking at this fight. We thought that Ryan would have a tougher time. We thought he would go in there and fight better than he did against Rolly. But another thing, too, it's like Ryan was saying all these things. Oh, I'm in the best shape of my life, best camp of my life, never been more focused. We've heard fighters say that as well, and we have to see it happen in the ring. So, like, I didn't exactly believe Ryan when he was saying those things. I guess he looked in better shape. But, like, I just didn't believe it heading into the Barrios fight. And he proved a lot of people wrong, not just us. He proved a lot of people wrong with how he won that fight. Even if you were picking Ryan to win this fight, I guarantee there's not many people out there that saw a 12-0, 11-1 dominant performance like that.
No, I think that was probably the least likely outcome. And even like, we were speaking off air, like I know our official picks on here were, you know, for Barrios, but I was saying, I could see Ryan knocking him out early and I can see Barrios, you know, squeaking it out late. I did not think Ryan was going to go out there and absolutely dominate for 12 rounds and look phenomenal in the 12th round as well. He showed a lot. He showed how much depth he actually has as a fighter. And that's why now he's a champion. He has entered the room as a world champion in the history books. And with that kind of performance, it really is eye-opening to see what this guy can do now.
Yes, what can he do now? Ryan Garcia with the right hand to go along with the left hook, the jabbing abilities, the in and outs, the focus, more importantly. Can this guy go on a run at welterweight against some of the biggest names?
Why not? I mean, I think you said it immediately after. I mean, the Devin Haney rematch is just so that's like a succulent thing. It's so juicy, that fight. Like it's right there. There's a narrative. They have the history. They have the bad blood. They'll be able to sell it great. That fight is that it just seems like a no brainer. But then you got Shakur Stevenson, who's getting talked to on the telecast and calling him out and saying, "I'd love to fight him." But he's like, "Oh, would you fight him?" He's like, "Yeah, absolutely." You've got the Conor Benz of the world, who, you know, that we're going to get into that in a little bit later, has been calling out Ryan for a while. Ryan said he'd love to go over there and fight him. There's just a lot of big fights out there for Ryan in the welterweight division, which is now hot again. It wasn't.
It's hot.
Super cold. It's hot now. So perfect timing.
It is hot. The champions right now, Ryan Garcia is the WBC champion at 147. Devin Haney, WBO. WBA is Rolly Romero. And IBF is Lewis Crocker.
Real quick, I forgot Rolly. There's a great storyline there too. He can avenge. He can avenge the loss. I can't believe I forgot the Rolly fight because
I know Rolly because he hasn't fought since that fight, Rolly, and he hasn't been doing a lot of media, Rolly, for considering where he's just kind of doing his own thing, Rolly. He's maturing, but he's a WBA champion right now, Rolly Romero. When it comes to what Ryan's going to do next, there's a lot of options out there, like you just said. There's a lot of compelling matchups. The Shakur Stevenson Ryan Garcia fight just doesn't appeal to me because of the catch weight. Because Shakur Stevenson is adamant that they're going to have to fight at 143, 144. I don't want to watch a weight drained Ryan Garcia fight Shakur Stevenson in what is already a lopsided match on paper. If Shakur's going to go fight Ryan Garcia and he's calling him out and he's clearly what he wants, then I want to see it at full 147.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I don't want to see Ryan fight under 147 again. I don't want to see him trying to whittle himself down. He's got the frame for it. You know, even at welterweight, he's still tall for a welterweight. He was a little shorter than Barrios. Barrios is really tall. But he's in terms of the good weight that he's put on, you know, the musculature, the way he's filled out, I don't want to see him under 47. I could see him at 54. He has enough power. He's fast enough. And he's putting on, you know, good quality muscle. I agree with you 100%. Seeing him weight drained against Shakur, it'll taint the result.
Yeah, like that's not being talked about. Obviously, like the ring is pushing it. Shakur wants it so bad because he sees a guy that he can
dollar
beat
signs.
In dollar signs, and especially now Ryan is bigger than ever. But I just can't get past the weight because that's the next thing we're going to discuss. Like obviously everyone's excited about Shakur versus Ryan because Shakur just won over Teofimo. Ryan just won here back to back months. It's the hot fight right now. then once we peel that back and that dies down a little bit and we get into the negotiations for this fight, and Shakur is adamant that the fight has to be at 144 pounds, and Ryan Garcia has trouble with the weight. Yes, he made the weight for this one, but he's notoriously been a guy that's blown past weight and had trouble making the weight. He's huge. So, okay, so he comes in at 144. They put a rehydration clause. I'd rather than put a rehydration clause, even though I hate those, and I know you do too, make 147 and then say Ryan can't come in the next day or next morning higher than 157. I'd rather see that than 144.
Yeah, if it took that to get it over the line, yes. But again, I don't like that either.
I don't like it. I'm just, let that be clear. I hate that as well.
I love the idea of, you know, think about this. Shakur Stevenson moved up from 135 to, in his first fight at 140, he went for the big dog in the division, and that was Teofimo Lopez, and he dominated him. Now, imagine he moves up from 140 to 147, first fight at 47, goes right at Ryan Garcia for a world title. Like, I mean, the storyline is so good there that I think the catch weight kind of, like I said, it taints it. I don't think it's necessary. It go be a welterweight champ if you win.
Did Big Bro Terrence Crawford do a catch weight with Canelo? Did he do a rehydration clause with Canelo? No, he fought him at 168.
Great point. Great point.
So let's see that, Shakur. Like, I like the fight. Don't get me wrong. Like, we have to make these big fights. We have to keep this train rolling. We need to see these big fights. It's so important for boxing right now. Shakur versus Ryan Garcia would be electric. I mean, people would be tuning in. It would captivate the regular sports fans, the casuals, and the hardcores. But like the weight issue is going to be a big time problem, and that's when I see a holdup there. To me, Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney, too. That's the fight. That was the fight last year until Ryan lost to Rolly. You have the built-in animosity. You have the built-in drama. Now they're both champions. Unified welterweight championship rematch with all the drama. Ryan versus Haney. That, to me, that's the fight.
I agree. And I said that before this fight. If Ryan is to win this fight against Mario Barrios, the Haney fight is the no-brainer next choice. I mean, there's just everything you just said. You've got all the built-in drama. You've got the bad blood. Now you're unifying titles in the weight class that hasn't been unified since Terrence Crawford left a couple years ago. Yeah, it's just got everything. And also, they're both going to make boatloads of money in that fight. It's just the build-up to that. I mean, is there a bigger fight that can happen on American soil? Is there a bigger American fight?
Well, hopefully it does happen on American soil. Not Saudi Arabia, yeah, but I think Saudi's getting a little bit better. I think Saudi's getting a little bit better with that in terms of where they're placing these fights. But to answer your question, is there a bigger fight? No, there isn't. I think Ryan Garcia Haney is bigger than Boots and Virgil, which who knows with that fight. That fight is...
I agree.
And who knows if that fight's ever going to happen. It's bigger because these are bigger names and they've had their first fight. That first fight was huge. And then you have a PED suspension and a lawsuit. And now Haney has come back and won twice. Over Ramirez and then over Norman Garcia coming off of his best win. So it's legit again. It's legit again because it wasn't as legit. Like say we rewind to May and Haney wins his fight over Ramirez and he's a track star. He's running. Did not look great. Ryan eked out that win over Rolly in a putrid fight and did not look good. Now we're making this rematch Devin versus Ryan based off those performances. It's still big. But not as big as it is right now.
No, they're both riding super high. Devin is the man at 47 now. Like after he beat Norman, because everybody was looking at Norman like he was this absolute world beater, and then Devin went out there and drops him and dominates the fight and looks great doing it. So then Haney then becomes the guy to beat at 147. Ryan now, off of this amazing performance where he put everything together and reached his true potential, is a real player. He's not just a big money tag. He's a real champion. So yeah, no, I agree. This is as big as this fight could possibly be. And the time is now, man. This is the same thing with the Boots and the Virgil talk. We're like, this is such a good fight, but we don't need it to marinate. We don't need it to wait. We need it now. We need it when they're in their primes. And that's how I feel about Ryan and Devin. We need it now.
Oh man, I'm getting excited thinking about if Virgil and Boots do find a way to fight. We get that in like May or June. Ryan Haney in the fall or winter in the U.S. Then we're back. The U.S. boxing scene is back. Took a couple of years off with these Saudi fights and these guys not fighting each other. There's also Rolly Romero. So Ryan Garcia versus Rolly Romero is also intriguing. It would be a rematch just like the Haney fight. It would be a unification just like the Haney fight. It has a storyline. Rolly dropped Ryan. I like that fight too, but we're not hearing much about Rolly. Rolly wasn't even in attendance. Ryan Garcia seems to be fixated on fighting Haney or Shakur. But a Ryan Rolly fight, once again, like I would gladly watch that as well.
If we had to wait to get the Ryan Haney fight because Ryan was going to fight Rolly, I'd be okay with that. I think that would be it would give an opportunity to make the fight even bigger, because then you beat someone who already beat you. You're also getting another title, so then it would be unification once again. Then there'd be three belts on the line when Haney and Ryan were to step in. So that would be my only acceptable other fight than Ryan and Devin right now.
And then there's Lewis Crocker.
Hey, listen, it's not a bad champion, time to be Lewis, IBF champ. Not a bad time to be Lewis Crocker. There's dollar signs attached to that belt.
There really is, but he's got the IBF. You know what's also attached to that belt? Rehydration clause, 10 pounds. IBF.
Yes. Yes. No bueno.
Hitchens. Let's talk Hitchens really quick. What happened there?
Perfect segue. We'll
get back to Ryan in a second, but now that we have it here. So Hitchens makes the weight 140, but supposedly makes the second day weigh-in under 150. I think the 148 is being reported. Then falls ill. Says he was food poisoning or something. This is what his team is saying. Out of the fight with Duarte. Big time bummer. But we see Coppinger tweet that these second day weigh-ins are really harmful. You know, Hitchens looked terrible the next day against Lemos when he had to make the weight, insinuating that, you know, he's not sick. Insinuating that the reason why he's sick or not out of that fight is weight related. Because I don't think he was sick. I don't think he had food poisoning. I think he had a really hard time making both weights, and now he's out of the fight. And who knows what's next for Hitchens?
Yeah, he's big for the weight class. He has a hard cut every time to make 140, and he's actually said that in the past. So it's probably apt for Coppinger to make that assumption that maybe it's not sickness as much as it's weight related. But yeah, it's kind of like a weight making sickness is really what it is. I mean, you feel terrible when you're a hard cut. It'll take more than 24 hours to recover. So sometimes you have a really hard cut, and it seems like that's probably the case. I don't like the second day weigh-in. We've talked about this ad nauseum on this show about the IBF, and also the fact that it's, you know, just a standard plus 10 pounds across all the weight classes doesn't make any sense. It should be 10%. 10% would be, I think, within a safety window that would be okay. So yeah, if we're falling out of fights the day of because of this same day weigh-in, I mean, why? It's the only organization that does it. You've got guys who are literally going out there and saying, I don't want to fight for the IBF because I don't want to deal with the second day weigh-in. We've had guys say that. It's hurting their brand and their business. So I say we abolish it altogether, but yeah, that's my two cents on that.
I know where you stand on this, but I'm also seeing a lot of fans and media say we need to add this 10-pound rehydration clause to all organizations, because what it indicates is that guys are not fighting at their natural weight. If you are having issues making 10 pounds the next day, if you're blowing up more than 10 pounds the following day, then you shouldn't be fighting in that weight class. What do you think of that?
That's someone who is only people who have not cut weight would say that. And I understand where they're coming from. But I just don't think it's realistic. You'd have to that would be a sweeping change that would change the entire sport in every weight class. Because again, you'd have guys that similar to like when the UFC really did, they were really buckled down on drug testing. You saw everybody go up in weight. Everybody was like, oh, okay, can't use drugs anymore. Everybody starts going up a weight class because they're drugs help you cut too. So that's what people don't realize. That would be a sweeping change to the sport. And I just don't think there's enough. Unity in the sport to have a unilateral movement like that, where all across the board, everybody's going to do it. I mean, that's the problem with boxing, is we don't have a unified union that can decree something that. We have
so many fractured.
No, it's never going to happen. We have so many fractured rulemaking agencies that it's too hard to organize all that.
How about this? The weight bullying term.
I hate it. I think it's stupid, and I think anyone who knows about weight cutting understands that that's not really a real thing. If you can do it, if you can make the weight and go out there and perform. How are you bullying? You're just either you're disciplined enough to do the things properly nutrition wise, or you have the right team around you, or just your bodies are different. Everyone's ability to do that is, some people just are not very good at cutting weight, and they don't respond well to the weight, to the rehydration. Other guys do it fantastically. Some guys cut a ton of weight and you never hear anything about it. I don't like the term weight bully.
But then in terms of how much weight you should put on the next day, like we've seen guys balloon 20 pounds, 25 pounds, HBO would put the next day weight on the tail of tape. They don't do that anymore. What's the proper amount of weight then? If 10 is too little, and would you say 15, 20, or does it depend on the fighters and how they react?
So if we're going to get science-y real quick, so there has been a study or some studies that have taken weight-making data from mostly UFC and MMA guys, but also some boxing guys and boxers across the board. And generally, there's a range. It's a bell curve in terms of success rate and the amount of weight gained. So the people who don't gain a lot of weight aren't as successful. And then the guys who gain a certain amount of weight, there is a success. And then the guys who blow past and gain a lot of weight actually fall off in terms of their performance. And it's usually around 8 to 10% of the weight class. So like I said about the IBF, the 10% clause. So say, for example, the 140, that would be a plus 14 pound would be 10%. So that would be the upper range. So if you came in at 140 and the next day you're 154, that's the upper range of actually being beneficial for you size-wise. So probably closer to 51 or 150. So a 10 or 11 or 12 pound weight gain for a 140 pounder is probably about right. My buddy, Dr. Corey Peacock, is one of the head researchers that was involved in that study, and they found that it was very interesting because the guys who gained more than 10% actually had a fall in performance.
Oh wow. I mean, I think of Devin Haney when he fought Lomachenko.
Mm-hmm.
35. What would you say he was on fight night? 55?
I think there was reports he was like
60?
50. Yeah, 55. Six, like closer to
that's 71. 25 pounds.
Yeah, it's wild. But so Devin, for whatever reason, physiologically is able to carry the weight after a weigh-in like that and have great endurance too. Like endurance was a major part of that fight. Like in the 12th round, he was still fighting hard. And actually, I thought he won the 12th round, which what got him the victory. Some people can just do that and some people just don't. Like Lomachenko, for example, he doesn't blow up. He never blew up. You know, he's a small 35 pounder. And then him, for example, in that fight, he was probably in the ring like 144, you know, and gained like 8 or 9 pounds. And that's why they looked at completely different weight classes when they fought.
Listen, fighter safety is super important, and I'm going to take your words that the rehydration clauses are terrible. We never had to make weight, but you know, this is also a business. You know, this is also a sport. You know, we are seeing fights fall out now because of this clause.
Big problem.
And this was a big fight. Hitchens Duarte was a reason why a lot of people were ordering this pay-per-view. And a lot of people told me in the mentions and on social media, once this fight fell out, they were like, all right, I'm not ordering the fight anymore. Or super wow. Bummed out, lost a lot of enthusiasm for the card. It's harmful. The IBF thing, it's harmful to the fighters and their bodies, and it's harmful to the sport and the business. I'm sure the promoters are like, what the hell? Like, what's going on, IBF? Daryl Peoples? What's the deal with this weight clause? And for Hitchens, I mean, this guy talks a lot. We know he is a big-time yapper. He's on Twitter constantly calling everyone out under the sun. Had a lot to say about Duarte. Had a lot to say about everyone. Devin Haney, like he brings up names on fight weeks when he's fighting other opponents, and then he can't make the weight, and he's not fighting. So it does not make him look good either. But all around, bad, bad situation, and something that they need to take a look at.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was really looking forward to this fight. And it was a fight that... You know, it was such a great support. Yeah, it was a great support for the card because it was an excellent fight that really mattered too. Like the implications of the 140 pound division was really on display that night because you also had Horoka and Russell, Gary Antoine Russell fighting. So like 140 was on notice, you know, and so that fight falling through, especially so late, is really upsetting. And yeah, Duarte has got to be absolutely gutted. He looked so dialed in. He looked so locked in all week. The way that he was staring at Hitchens like he was food at the press conference, he looked super intense. I know training camp and Robert Garcia's camp is ridiculously hard, and I've heard that kid works really hard as well. So yeah, it's a real shame for him. It's a shame for us. It's a shame for Hitchens too. It's a shame that he didn't get a chance to go out there and perform. You know, again, when you talk all that talk, you want to be able to back it up, and he wasn't able to.
We need to stop saying he was scared. I know Duarte's going to say that because
Oscar came out right away saying that.
Oscar shouldn't be saying that because he's a fighter. Fighters aren't scared. You guys have no fear ever. Like the promoters are the ones that get in the way of these fights happening and the politics. The fighters are not scared. Hitchens didn't pull out of this fight because he was scared of Duarte. He pulled out of the fight because something happened with the weight and his body wasn't reacting properly. That's what this was.
Yeah, 100%. This is he wouldn't have pulled out of the fight unless he absolutely had to. Because listen, if we don't fight, we don't get paid. Like this is our job. This is prize fighting. If you pull out, you don't get paid. You know, so it had to have been him thinking that he was really in grave danger and physical danger, medical danger, because his body wasn't reacting, and that's a scary thing. And listen, even we're going to bring it back to Ryan because this is a Ryan-centric show. Ryan said that his body was not reacting during camp in his last fight as well when he fought Rollins. He was saying that his body just was not reacting the way that it should have. That's a scary thing for a fighter when your body is your tool. And if it's not responding, that's a scary place to be, especially in a sport where literally your life is on the line each and every time.
Did you catch Shakur in the post-fight show on the Zone? They teed him up like, hey, what'd you think of that Ryan performance? He goes, was Vada involved in this fight? He has a sly smile on his face, insinuating that Ryan was on the juice. Haney,
and he also said he looked like Shakur said he looked like he did against Devin Haney.
That was
which is another underhanded jab.
Yeah, they went to him in like the eighth or ninth round when Ryan was running away with it, and Shakur. I think first off, Shakur did a phenomenal job as a commentator up on the stage. Spot on his scorecards, his analysis, post-fight, he was on point with the Albright performance against Frank Martin, and then having him afterwards to weigh in on Ryan was brilliant. Yeah, he said during the fight, he looking like he did against Devin Haney, and like I think Mannix either didn't pick up on it or couldn't really ask a follow up because they had to get back to the action. That was he planted a little seed there. Then afterwards, up on the stage, the post fight show, he just straight up was like, "Was Vada involved in this fight?" And Devin Haney goes on Twitter and says, "Ryan on that juice or off that juice or." You know, so those questions are going to follow Ryan Garcia for the rest of his career, because you look as bad as you did in your last fight against Rolly when you were clearly not on the PEDs. And then you looked like you did against Haney, where you were massive. And look how big he was, bigger against Haney at 143 or whatever than he was against Barrios, and looked like a totally different guy. Yeah, but those PED allegations are going to constantly follow Ryan Garcia. From what I've heard and what everything I've seen, the Vada was part of this buildup.
Yeah, I'm sure it was, but because actually, I think this was getting brought up during the camp because he was posting pictures and he was in phenomenal shape. He was actually training, so a lot of people were like, oh, you know, the Vada. I think he was posting his actual Vada results, so Vada was definitely involved. But this just shows you how we haven't seen Ryan at his best. Either he was trying to cut way too much weight, or he just wasn't training. Because now we see the result when he trains and is in a weight class that he belongs in. He looks as good as he did last night. I didn't expect him to have the endurance that he had, you know, for a 12-round hard-fought fight, and he did. And again, so it's like you start to think, it's like, wow, is this guy really that talented that he hasn't even been training for these huge fights? Or has he been so weight-drained that it's really taken a piece of his performance away? Because this guy looked like the total package.
Yeah, he probably did. He righted a lot of wrongs probably in the lead-up in terms of diet and training. Where in the past he was drinking during fights, he was doing God knows what, he wasn't taking it serious. So in his first true fight at 147, well, no, the Rolly fight was, but he wasn't taking training serious in that one. But yeah, he was like the motor. I was really surprised by that. And he did taper off though in the second half of the fight, Ryan. Like I thought he could have got Barrios out of there, and Ryan even said it himself. That's the one knock on my performances was I want to go for the knockout. Which is something that Ryan always goes for, to his detriment sometimes. Mm-hmm. He did taper off, but you could just see his body language, like in the corner in like the 10th, 11th, 12th round, he was like smashing his gloves together. You know, he was like chomping at the bit. He was like running out of the corner, where Barrios on the other side was just looking lumped up and was like could barely get off the stool and head over there. But yeah, I was very surprised with the energy level from Ryan and throughout the 12 rounds, like on the balls of his feet, you know, bouncing up and down in championship rounds.
And everything he throws is hard. That's really real tiring. Everything he throws is hard. His jab is a battering ram. You know, he wings the right hook. He wings that right hand. And he's very twitchy. So he's got that start-stop explosiveness that's so hard to carry for 12 rounds. And yeah, he taped it off a little bit, but honestly, I think that's a good thing. 12 rounds is a very long time. Very long time to be super explosive the whole time. And also, to your point, like you said, like, he's always going for that knockout, and sometimes it's to his detriment. I actually talked about this in an article while I was talking about his faults. And I was like, well, I think his boxing IQ is actually very high. I just think that he gets so bloodthirsty for knockouts that he puts himself in bad position, or he'll get hit with stuff that he shouldn't get hit with. So many people were talking about, like, you know, the fact that we were talking about how his defense is actually good. Many people were like, his defense isn't good.
Chris's categories lights up the internet.
Off. Yeah, pisses everybody off.
Oh, it's great.
Which is crazy, because on the back end, you look back and you're like, oh, he's right about all of that. The IQ, the defense, everything was there. Ryan he does have all that stuff. We just never saw him do it. That was the problem. They finally put it all together.
Yeah, his defense was really good on Saturday night too. And he held Barrios to, I think Barrios had 43 power shots in the entire fight. And he's always had good defense. But when you think of Ryan, you think of him getting tagged by Gervonta. You think of him getting dropped by Rolly. Mm-hmm. You don't think of him as a boxer. You don't think of him as a defensive guy.
Getting rocked by Devin.
Yeah. Of course. So, yeah, he does have good defense, does have good ring IQ, power, speed. Put it all together against Mario Barrios, and it's good for the sport. Co-main event was Gary Antoine Russell against Andy Hirooka. Wasn't as good of a fight as I thought it would be. It was a lot of fouling. It was a lot of an up-and-down performance. Hirooka did nothing for the first 5-6 rounds of the fight and then stepped on the gas pedal. Gary cruised in the first couple of rounds, and then Hirooka came on. But Russell wins 117-110 is too wide. 116-112, 116-111 because of the point deduction in the 10th round. Did you see that lobe? That was a taint shot, dude. You ever get punched in your taint?
That was like up and under. That was ridiculous. That's one of the most blatant bad low blows I've ever seen.
Where he went beyond taint the shot. Sack and went right to the taint. And like, bah, it almost lifted him off the ground.
And also, cups don't go that far around. Like, it's people don't understand. I think a lot of people who've never worn a cup or been in like Washington, it's a hip protector. And you've got a leather padding that goes up above to your navel, and that protects your hip bones, because getting punched in your hip bones is really, really painful and dangerous. And then it goes around and wraps around over your groin, and it tucks on and under. But then, you know, you're not supposed to get hit in your back anyway, so there's no protection behind you. So if you go up and under that way, there's nothing protecting you.
That was nasty. That was a really nasty low blow. Hirooka got a point taken off of that. But Russell outlands Hirooka 60-36 in the first 5 rounds. Damn. Hirooka didn't land a single body shot in the first 4 rounds, then landed 20 body shots in the 5th round alone.
That's nuts, because the body shots were a major weapon for Hirooka down the stretch. Like, he was like tagging Russell. Russell's super tough, man, because he was getting clocked with body shots for the whole second half of the fight. We got news that Hirooka came from Japan on Thursday for fight week because of visa issues. I think that really took the air out of this fight, because this could have been a really good fight. It wasn't a bad fight, but it wasn't that thrilling. But
it took the air out of what I thought it was going to be heading in. Like, yes. I didn't think Hirooka had any shot, but it didn't affect his performance whatsoever. Hirooka, maybe
it did though.
Someone said on the live that Hirooka was jet lagged for the first 5 rounds.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I think it did, because one of two things happened. One, It's kind of true. He was jet lagged. He had to like get his legs underneath him and warm up for those first couple rounds, and then finish strong. Or he had it in his mind that he was like, I need to take it easy early, because 12 rounds is a long time and I'm going to need a late rush. So it could have changed his actual execution of his game plan. But regardless, it did take the air out of the fight altogether.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it was a tale of two fights. Russell early, just looking athletic. Looking in and out, also coming off of a really long layoff too, like of his own.
True.
So was Hirooka. Besides the jet lag, he hadn't fought since 2024. Then Hirooka outlanded Russell over the last 6 rounds. So it was all Russell first, all Hirooka second half of the fight. Maybe that's why we saw a scoring like we did. Like, I'm pretty sure all the judges, I haven't had the scorecard, but I would not be shocked if all the judges gave Russell the first 5 rounds. and then gave Hiroko a bunch of those middle rounds and Russell late. Over to Russell, though, he continues to be an enigma. Like, he loses to Puelo, and we take a step back on the Gary Antoine Russell hype train, comes back with that unbelievable Valenzuela performance. And then this one here, I mean, he got hit a lot. You know, he wasn't able to figure out the herky-jerkiness of Hiroka. So I got to cool the Jets a little bit on Gary Antoine Russell. He got the win. But I got to cool the Jets a tiny bit on Russell.
Or is Hiroka that good? Because a lot of questions about Hiroka. There was a lot of people that, I know you saw this as well. People were that was the sexy pick you said was Hiroka, because Hiroka is good. We just haven't really seen him on the world stage all that much. I guess that's yet to be seen. We're not really going to know. Between those performances that you said from Gary, it's like poor performance against Pueyo, great performance against Ryo, and this one's kind of in the middle. But is it more Russell, or is it the fact that Hiroka is that tricky of a guy?
Both.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah, that is the right answer.
But Russell wins. I thought he won the fight narrowly. Yeah.
Definitely
so you win in advance in this sport. Win in advance. He called for unifications afterwards. Shakur said he has sparred Gary Antoine Russell more than any other fighter in the world.
Interesting.
I would love to watch that fight. Some of the other, Dalton Smith at 140. Who are the other champs? Get Lamont Roach. I know he's not a champ, but get him in the mix there too. A lot of options for Gary Antoine Russell. Frank Martin, Nahir Albright, fight to a draw. Scrappy little fight. Albright is just fits.
Trouble.
He is trouble.
Nahir Albright's he's not just awkward. He's good. He's really good. He's sneaky. He's tricky. He's very crafty. Extremely savvy pro. He's one of those guys you got to look past the numbers and look at his record. You see all the guys that he's fought at every level. You know, from right in the beginning of his career, he was fighting like tough local guys. Like I know pretty much all the guys on his record, because it's just like there were guys that just came up locally in the Northeast area. And listen, the kid can fight, and he's big for the weight class. He's tall, he's long, he's wide. He uses it well. Frank Martin, new to the weight class, pretty small for 140, I think, even though he's a really muscular guy. But entertaining fight. You had to really watch it though. There's a lot of tricky things going on.
It was a good fight, and I was fine with the draw. And another thing with Frank Martin too, it's like, yeah, like we were coming off the Rancis fight, the Bartholomew knockout, and everyone was pumping up Martin, and then he goes in there and maybe got to pump the brakes a little bit on Martin, but also give Albright his props too, who's just a really, really good B-side now, 140, which is a really good weight class. All in all, pretty good card. The Duarte Hitchens fight falling out took away from this, and that became a big bummer, but decent stuff.
Beck Bully fight was fun. Beck Bully's always fun.
I kind of was in and out of that one. I was cooking a little bit, getting ready for the live, and I missed that one.
It was fun. It was entertaining.
Joshua Edwards, way early on the night, fighting the balding mullet Italian guy from Queen, from Canada.
I didn't see that, no.
Oh, my God. This guy was amazing. I don't have his name, but he just was like really kind of out of shape looking. Hairy man. Chest full of hair.
Balding mullet.
And he was going there to lose. To be like, he was facing Joshua Edwards, who's up and coming heavyweight. They go the distance. Like, he didn't win a single minute of the fight, the Canadian guy. But I got to pull up a picture of this guy. His physique. I didn't, like, there was tweets like, I didn't know they made humans like this anymore. Bro, look at this guy.
Wow.
That's Ron Katz.
He's a throwback. He's a throwback guy from, wow.
And they interviewed him after. I love Mannix interviewed him after, and he went on a spiel. I'm not like these other Canadians sitting on their couch, a bunch of haters. He called himself the real life Rocky.
I love this guy. Get him a reality show.
I gotta get his name.
Bring him back.
Unreal. Good stuff. All right, let's head over to some other news that broke the boxing world on Friday. Conor Benn signs with Zuffa Boxing. A complete shocker. I didn't know Ben's contract was up with Matchroom. I didn't know he was a free agent. I did not think he would ever do something like this. I didn't know he was on Zuffa's radar. But man, the ramifications are just so juicy, and there's just so many layers. I hate this phrase, a lot to unpack here, but there is a lot to unpack. If you go to the Hearn-Dana White rivalry, you know, Eddie Hearn and Conor Benn seem like more than just a working relationship. They seem like legit friends. And Hearn is really hurt and upset over this. The business ramifications, what does this mean for Zuffa? Are they going to enter the UK market? $15 million is being reported for one fight? It's not even a deal. This is like a, is it a one-off? I mean, it's insane. Like, there's not many things that, like, your jaw drops and you look at your phone and, like, is this fake? Like, I thought it was fake at first, but it's real. It's really happening.
Yeah. That, you and I were speaking about this, you know, a lot on Friday when it first broke. We were like, we literally was like, this can't be real. And sure enough, it is. Big implications for, in a lot of different ways. I mean, gotta love the Dana White, Eddie Hearn, high school, you know, relationship that they're having now, fighting each other and you know, fighting over a girl, you know, this kind of attitude that they're having. But yeah, I don't know where this goes exactly. Obviously, this is a big play by Zuffa to say, hey, listen, we can get big guys too. And we have enough money to get that. So other fighters are going to look at that and like, oh, well, you know, like at a different tier, right? Because Ben's not a champion, but he's at a very high tier in terms of one earning potential and potentially being a world champion one day. So that grab shows other fighters that are around that level. They're like, oh, wow, they're getting guys like this now. This is different than what we kind of expected or thought they were up to at this point. So I think it's more of using him as a lure. It works out great for him because that money is huge, and that money's not going to be like that. It's not going to stay like that. Eight-figure deals for one fight, that's normally is going to be very, very rare, and I think moving forward it will be too, because that's just, there's no business model that can support that. So it is. It's bait. It's bait for other fighters.
What it is bait. Like, Zuffa wants to get into the UK market. They want to get that Sky Sports deal. So how do you do that? You need a star. You need a star from the UK. And outside of Anthony Joshua and Katie Taylor, Conor Benn is the third biggest name in the UK right now. He becomes a free agent. You sign him. You bring him over to London. You bring him over to the UK. Now you have your Sky Sports broadcast deal. So the $15 million is absurd, but it's $15 million. It's an investment. It's an investment to get a... to expand Zuffa's footprint in the box world and enter the UK, enter Eddie Hearn's backyard. That explains the $15 million. Is Conor Benn worth $15 million in the open market? Absolutely not. So that's what that was, a business play. And he's not a world-class fighter. We've seen him struggle, and we know what Conor Benn is at this point. But every fighter from 147 to 154, even to 160, is calling out this guy's name. He's linked to Ryan Garcia, Shakur Stevenson, Devin Haney, all these guys. He's a hot commodity. And Zuffa has him now. Then you throw in the fact that this was Eddie's guy. Like, the two differences of Eddie on Friday, Thursday, when that interview dropped, to the down and out interview. Yeah. Like, this is real life. This is like Vince McMahon would say, let's turn it down a little bit. This storyline is too fake. But it's real. And this is why I say that boxing is in one of the most interesting and craziest times right now, with all these promoters and all this business stuff and the rewriting legislation. And it's great for the fighters. Like, a beneficiary of this is Conor Benn. Right place, right time for that guy. $15 million. Like, you're telling me you wouldn't leave Eddie Hearn for $15 million?
Well, that's what even what Dana was saying. Like, Dana's like, if this guy was your friend, you should be happy for him. You're making this life-changing money. And Dana says this, I don't know how true this is. Dana said that Eddie had a right of first refusal, he could match it, right? But apparently then Eddie comes and he said that, you know, Ben didn't answer the phone call or the lawyers or whatever. So I don't know who to believe here, and I don't think we're ever gonna get the truth. But yeah, it's Eddie is like, he legitimately is hurt by this. It's a guy that he's taken up from the very beginning, and stuck by him through all the drug scandal stuff for 2 years, and had to go up there and talk about him each and every time. And I think that's a big part of it too, that Eddie does feel so scorned, because he bent over backwards, you know, during that time and supported him. So, but this is boxing, man. It boxers, promoters, fighters. Business wins the day.
I'm not about to feel bad for Eddie Hearn.
That's most people are going to think.
I'm not about to feel bad for any boxing promoter or anyone in this business. It's the most cutthroat business in all of sports. But I think Eddie knows how to act. I think Eddie knows how to play this. He knows how to manipulate the media. And he says, if I come in with this interview and I show that I'm heartbroken, I'm distraught, mm-hmm. I'm loyal, because mm-hmm. he has to save face and he has to, you know, now think about his company and future fighters. So there, if you're a future fighter out there, if you're a fighter signed to Matchroom, you're like, wow, this guy really rides for me. This guy will go to the depths of hell to defend me, find me fights, champion me, defend me. So that's what I think that was. I also think he was hurt too. I do. We are human beings, and I do think he was hurt because I do think, you know, he really rode hard for Ben. I mean, he was put his reputation on the line, put his name on the line, put their business on the line, because those were some serious allegations and some serious stuff that was against Ben in that one. So I think there's a lot of things. I think there's some pageantry here with Eddie. You know, apparently he knew on last week. So when he did that fiery interview, he kind of, and that explains why he was so.
You alluded to that too. Yeah, you alluded to that. You were spot on with that. Yeah,
that he was so fired up?
He was charged up. I was just like, I mean, he just called out his dad and his family. But yeah, I guess it was over the top, you know, his response.
Yeah, that's not think how about it. If you're Eddie, it's like the news is about to break that Ben is going to Zuffa. You know this. The rest of the world does it. And then this guy that's taking it is calling you a Nepo baby, all these names. So of course he's going to freak out. But yeah, I put two and two together there. But I never thought that Ben would do this. Wild.
This is not on anyone's bingo card. This is a completely out of left field move. And it does have big implications that ripples through the sport. And if they did it on fight week of a big, you know, the big fight, obviously. But yeah, this is going to be a weird one to see how this all shakes out.
Chris, you're a fighter and you have had promoters, you have gone through litigation with promoters, you have changed promoters. Like, there's no loyalty in this game. You want loyalty, get a dog. Famous saying.
Yeah, no. I mean, and especially for fighters. We have such a small window to make money. You can't knock a fighter for doing something like this. That's gonna affect his bottom line, his family, his future. And, yeah, this is a life-changing deal. Like, you know, and yeah, I mean, promoters' careers are decades. Fighters' careers are, you're lucky if you get a decade. You know, so.
Well, that's what Oscar said, which I found like, come on, Oscar, you don't have to say it like that. He's like, Eddie, don't worry about it. Stop crying. We're going to be here forever. That's what he said.
It's funny to see Eddie and Oscar like buddying up.
Yeah, there's no way Eddie watched that interview and was like, oh, I don't want to hear it from Oscar now. Like, easy for you to say to get over it. Like, but even Oscar was like, hey, listen, we're promoters. We're going to be here long after these fighters. Fighters come and go. It's true. That's why I don't feel that bad. It's amazing to watch, like, as a fan and as someone in the media, to like watch this all play out. But it just goes to our main point. If you've been following along and we've been on top of the Zuffa stuff, they're not going anywhere, guys. They're going to pay over market value for some of these guys.
Big chip in.
And I saw that, I don't know if this is for sure, but I saw something out there that now if you sign to Zuffa, you're going to be able to fight on ring cards and Riyadh cards.
So then, again, the rules are changing. So now you're not just stuck in the talent pool.
No, it's a turkey thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a way to get the name out there, Zuffa. Like, they made huge headlines. They're going to sign Andy Ruiz next. Not that that's huge. But they're going to sign to
me. I think they did already. I saw
was that announced?
I think so. I think that's out already. I mean, we knew that. We knew that coming forward because we had heard that there is a former world champion American heavyweight. We're all like, well, that list is two people, so it's obviously it's not Wilder, not Wilder. It's Andy Ruiz.
Yeah, but Zuffa's not going anywhere. They're making big moves. This was a shot across the bow. Nick Khan, Dana White, Turkey. It's a Turkey move. This was a Turkey. You know,
Turkey likes surprises. He loves surprises.
And now he's going to funnel these guys, funnel Zuffa fighters to the ring events and the Riyadh cards. And then until there's nothing left, until it's just Zuffa. But who do you think Ben fights? Like $15 million, obviously it's convoluted because it means more than just a $15 million fight. It has to do with the rights in the business side of things. But they did talk about Zuffa doing two or three big fights a year, like mega events. Like, I don't know if Ben is a mega event type of guy, but if you put him in there with some of these other big names like Devin Haney, then yeah, that is a big fight. Overseas, like it's not going to be at the Apex. He's going to be fighting over in UK. I don't know who Ben fights.
I mean, for $15 million, I really don't know. But whoever it is going to get a big bag too. But I mean, they obviously seem like they're trying to target like a Ryan Garcia. You know, that would be big enough. That would make sense. You know,
but he's locked up with Golden Boy. He can say he's a free agent. He's not a free agent.
Right. And Haney, he's even said, Ben's even said, you don't want to fight a guy like Haney who thinks he's going to run all night. So, I mean, is Crocker, you know, going to get his title fight against Crocker? Is that,
is Crocker huge... with Matchroom?
I think, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Like the 15 million attachment, like that's huge. So it means like, oh, that indicates there's going to be a big fight. And like, and Zuffa has said we want big fights. Like, he's not, this isn't like a signing to have him fight the Apex, like the Opetaia one.
No.
This is a different rung. This is like another level above. So I'm curious who they're going to find for him. Could it be like a domestic type of fight that Ben should win? I mean, they only have him for one fight. Zuffa does, but
where does Ben go after his, if this one fight? Like, it's like, is he going to go back to Eddie?
No,
that seems to be quite strained. You know, is he's not going to go to Top Rank? He's not going to go to De La Hoya. He's going to stick with Turkey. Exactly.
It's now a Turkey. It's a web now. It's now a Zuffa, Riyadh, Sella, Turkey web.
And I mean, it's just showing itself to be that.
Now they have a promoter now. Like now they're a promoter. Like they were never up a promoter. Now they have Zuffa.
Yeah, they used to use Eddie for his promotion. They used to use Matchroom and Eddie, and now they've got their own.
It is interesting to watch them say all this stuff, though. Like, who's the other guy? Frank Smith. Mm-hmm. Did an interview and goes, oh, this was always Conor Ben's mentality.
Like, yeah.
Really, bro?
I mean, he said that.
Once.
He said he'd been on and off with him over the years, you know, from that. I know that interview you're talking about.
Yeah, but he never has said that. And Eddie, you know, I didn't think he'd do. Like, come on. It's just Soja now that they aren't doing business anymore. Now they're going to besmirch his name. That just shows you what promoters are.
Yeah, and I love the fact that they both were like, well, I'm not going to talk bad about him. I'm not going to slag him off, you know, now. But like, and then they kind of are. Yeah.
Then they kind of do. What a wild time in boxing. An absolute wild start to the year. We're entering March. And we've had some big fights. We've had Zuffa really put their foot down and really make a stamp so far. Floyd Mayweather coming out of retirement to fight professionally was announced on Friday night. Like, dude, I was sitting on my couch Friday. I was like, it was like rainy. I was like, I'm gonna have a nice little quiet day. And I see the Ben news. Obviously, you have to react to that. And then I refresh my email and I get a press release that Floyd Mayweather is coming out of retirement. And I'm thinking in my head, like, refreshing your email as a boxing media member, you're liable to see anything.
Don't do it right before bed. That's one thing. Do not check your email right before bed when you're...
Or Twitter.
Or Twitter, yeah.
Firing up Twitter, firing up your email. Like, we'll have to get into that in a later episode. Save some more for later on in the week with this Floyd Mayweather stuff and where Ryan goes from here.
The great thing is we have tons of content always. The boxing is so wild right now. There's always things for us to talk about.
It's absolutely nuts. And the uncrowned era of inside boxing has begun. I appreciate listeners.
Good start.
Any new listeners, any new watchers, our day ones and our ride or dies, we love you as well. The response from the announcement was phenomenal. It's really awesome to see the best boxing community. And the response to Henry Garcia, too. I go look in the comments. A lot of people coming to our defense.
I'm not surprised.
Either I've seen Chris come out of retirement, fight Henry and Ryan in the same night. I saw a guy, like, I don't understand it. Dan and Chris, I've always been there for Ryan and supported him and said he's good and never been personal. These guys are too sensitive, so...
It's sensitive. Listen, it's when it's your kid and you're being a dad. Like, he's being a dad. He's not being a trainer. He's being his dad. I totally get it. I think it's funny. I think it's hilarious. But also, it is a good pop for the pod. So, thank
Chris
you.
Chris Algieri, piece of shit, and his corny ass partner, Dan Canobio, signing off for Inside Boxing Live. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. See you on Thursday.